Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Over the next 2 days, we'll be discussing the assassination of Charlie Kirk, the response, the fallout, and where we go from here. First, a bit of background on Charlie Kirk. He was an evangelical Christian who founded Turning Point USA when he was only 18 years old. It is now the largest and most powerful conservative youth organization in the country. Turning Point has hundreds of chapters nationwide. At age 23, Charlie Kirk became the youngest speaker at the Republican National Convention, the same year Trump won the Electoral College. Charlie Kirk spoke at CPAC and was very close with J.D. Vance, according to reports. On September 10th, J.D. Vance tweeted, "So much of the success we've had in this administration traces directly to Charlie's ability to organize and convene. He didn't just help us win in 2024, he helped us staff the entire government." Charlie Kirk and Turning Point held massive rallies and college tours across the country. When Charlie Kirk visited colleges, he sat under a Prove Me Wrong tent, just as he did when he was shot last Wednesday at Utah Valley University. He spent hours answering questions from college students. He was answering a question about gun violence when he was shot in front of about 3,000 people last Wednesday. Here is a clip and a warning. You will hear a shot at the end of this clip.
Hi, yeah, this is Oregon. Hey, Charlie. Hey, hopefully we're gonna have a little bit more disagreement. All right, a few weeks ago there was a transgender mass shooter. And ever since then, about 3 weeks later, the Trump DOJ said that we should start talking about revoking gun rights for transgender Americans. Yeah. I think you're in support of this decision. Yes, is that fair to say? All right, great. So do you know how many transgender Americans have been mass shooters over the last 10 years?
Too many.
Okay, now five is a lot, right? I'm gonna give you some credit. Do you know how many mass shooters there have been in America over the last 10 years?
Counting or not counting gang violence?
Great.
Charlie Kirk was assassinated at the age of 31. The alleged gunman, Tyler Robinson, is just 22. He shot Charlie Kirk from a roof about 430 feet away, according to the New York Times. Authorities say he used a Mauser 98. That's a bolt-action rifle that is used for hunting. Robinson was raised in a Republican home, according to reports. Social media photos posted by his family show him and his two younger brothers shooting and posing with guns over the years. Authorities are still searching for a motive. But Trump and his allies immediately blamed the, quote, far left and left-wing extremism. Here is Trump speaking from the Oval Office right after we learned that Charlie Kirk was killed.
For years, those on the radical left have compared wonderful Americans like Charlie to Nazis and the world's worst mass murderers and criminals. This kind of rhetoric is directly responsible for the terrorism that we're seeing in our country today, and it must stop right now. My administration will find each and every one of those who contributed to this atrocity and to other political violence, including the organizations that fund it and support it, as well as those who go after our judges, law enforcement officials, and everyone else who brings order to our country. From the attack on my life in Butler, Pennsylvania last year, which killed a husband and father, to the attacks on ICE agents, to the vicious murder of a healthcare executive in the streets of New York, to the shooting of House Majority Leader Steve Scalise and three others, radical left political violence has hurt too many innocent people and taken too many lives.
On Monday, while hosting Charlie Kirk's podcast, J.D. Vance said people should tell their employers if they see someone celebrating Charlie Kirk's killing. More than 30 companies have sanctioned or fired people so far, according to the Washington Post, and we'll talk more about that on tomorrow's show. Many people say they had never heard of Charlie Kirk before last Wednesday's assassination. You're probably hearing some commentators calling him a gifted debater, while others say his worldview was vile. Well, here is a compilation of Charlie Kirk in his own words. This is from the Joy Reid Show. And another warning, this is very offensive.
The Civil Rights Act was a mistake.
More cops should be around your neighborhood. Why do blacks have a broken family? A white person were to come up and say, you know, black America really needs to get its act together and stop sleeping around all the time. And it needs to actually
Because
it's true.
What percentage of young blacks have both a mom and a dad raising them?
Of course we pandered to blacks. They're in every TV commercial.
And they're saying, I'm only here because of affirmative action. Yeah, we know. You do not have the brain processing power to otherwise be taken really seriously.
If I'm dealing with somebody in customer service who's a moronic black woman, I wonder, is she there because of her excellence, or is she there because of affirmative action?
Things got worse since the Civil Rights Act. More violent, less fathers around, poorer.
Be kissing the ground with gratitude, because you're right. You are not in Africa, and you should be thankful you're not in Africa.
Certain skin color now gets their own summertime celebration. It's now become a racial complaining day. BLM, and remember what BLM stands for: burn, loot, and murder.
That is a compilation of Charlie Kirk in his own words from The Joy Reid Show. She is no longer at MSNBC, but she is now hosting her own show independently. Today, we are going to talk about the reaction to all of this and where we go from here with three reporters who cover conspiracy theories and far-right extremist groups. A.C. Thompson is a staff reporter with ProPublica, where he covers hate crimes and racial extremism. He covered the vigil for Charlie Kirk in Huntington Beach over the weekend. A.C. Thompson is also a producer and correspondent for Frontline. Hi, A.C. Thank you for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
We're also joined by Mike Rothschild, a conspiracy theory journalist and author of two books, Jewish Space Lasers, The Rothschilds and 200 Years of Conspiracy Theories, and The Storm is Upon Us, How QAnon Became a Movement, Cult, and Conspiracy Theory of Everything. Mike Rothschild writes that a big part of the performative martyrdom of Charlie Kirk stems from his alleged killer not being who the far right needed him to be. They banked on his death having political meaning, and so far, it doesn't. He also writes that many long-entrenched media figures on both sides are clearly struggling to fit the alleged shooter into a neat box, not realizing that for many young people radicalized by endless years of toxic chats, their only political ideology is LOL. Hi, Mike. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by David Gilbert, a reporter at Wired, covering disinformation, online extremism, and how they impact people's lives across the globe. One of David Gilbert's latest pieces is called Extremist Groups Hated Charlie Kirk. They're using his death to radicalize others. Hi, David. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, do we have David? David, you might be on mute.
Apologies. Thanks for having me, Rose.
Thank you. You know, David, I wonder, so you're in Ireland, so you're watching this from outside of the United States. And I just wonder what your thoughts are overall. And I just want to share that I had a really hard time finding a compilation of Charlie Kirk in his own words. There are a lot of very long exchanges with students. I'm not seeing many in the media actually play his own words. And I just wonder also what you think about that.
Yeah, I think it's, first of all, I suppose looking at it from afar, really from over here, it's quite shocking to see the way the reaction to this shooting, especially amongst the Trump administration, I think, because of the way that they have, because I guess so many of them knew him personally, but it seems that they are leaning into what's happened for their own benefit in a lot of cases. We've seen what Kash Patel has been talking about. We've seen what Pete Hegseth has done. it's, and J.D. Vance, of course, it just seems absolutely mind-blowing that they've done all of this. They've, you know, lowered flags to half-mast across the country, talking about targeting people who speak out against him. And they're talking about him in a way as if he is, you know, as if he was the president or he was some senior figure within the government. But he was effectively just a podcaster, a hugely popular podcaster for a lot of people. But I find it really difficult to understand how this reaction is happening, and something similar didn't happen when Melissa Hortman was shot and killed just a couple of months ago. It's just really strange. And I think for people outside of the US, most of them would not have heard of Charlie Kirk until last week. Now, we saw in London at the weekend, we saw at the United Kingdom protests, the far-right protests organized by Tommy Robinson. We saw his name on posters. We saw people chanting his name. He has become this kind of lightning rod for far-right movements all around the globe, or right-wing movements, and to kind of as an excuse for people to push their kind of ideology more, because they said we're at war, which is the kind of rhetoric we've seen in the US. And people have definitely picked up on that outside of the US. And I think we're going to see more and more of that, where people will use this as a reason for them to become more extreme, I think, in their views, because they feel, oh, well, if Charlie Kirk can be murdered, then maybe anybody can be murdered.
Well, and to your point, for people who do not know this, Charlie Kirk's casket was loaded onto Air Force Two, which is J.D. Vance's plane. Donald Trump released a proclamation last week ordering that the flag of the U.S. be flown at half staff at the White House, all public buildings and grounds, all military posts and naval stations, all naval vessels. And then there was a moment of silence at many sporting games over the weekend. In fact, the football teams that did not take part in a moment of silence for Charlie Kirk are being criticized. So it's interesting to hear what the perspective is like outside of the United States. AC, what are your overall reactions to all of this? What do you think we should be focusing on right now? And it's also really interesting. I think people are afraid. We're going to talk about this more tomorrow, but people are losing their jobs. And I'm noticing that some shows aren't even talking about this. It's probably easier to not talk about this. So what are your thoughts about what has happened and the response so far?
Right. Thank you, Rose. I have so many thoughts. So let me start the first one. And it's this. Look, violence directed at any person is awful. Violence directed at Charlie Kirk, the murder of Charlie Kirk, is absolutely awful, obviously. As well, all these other incidents we've seen of political violence in the run-up to the 2020 election, which I witnessed on January 6th, when you're talking about the attack on lawmakers and the assassination of lawmakers in Minnesota, all of these things are awful, and they should all be condemned, and they should all be something that we as a society strive to get away from. When you look at the social science on the support for political violence in America, it is increasingly, it's getting higher and higher. You look at studies from UC Davis, the political, or the Public Religion Research Institute, you know, you're seeing somewhere between 25% to 33% of people saying, yeah, I support violence as a means to achieve political ends. That social science tends to say that Republicans are more supportive of the use of violence to change the direction of the country. That's what that sociology says. None of this is good. I have a deep and abiding fear that what we're going to see is more of this, because it's very easy to kill people in America. This is a country that is very good at doing assassination, at doing terrorism. People have access to these tools and can do this. I also have been shocked by the rush to ascribe motives to somebody whose motives are totally unclear at this point, the gunman, the person who allegedly killed Charlie Kirk, and to start to enact some kind of political agenda based on what seems to be very little information.
Right, and that's something that you wrote, Mike, that a big part of the performative martyrdom of Charlie Kirk stems from his alleged killer not being who the far right needed him to be. You write, they banked on his death having political meaning, and so far it doesn't. The fact is, we still don't know the motive, Mike.
Right. We don't know the motive. And as this investigation goes on, and the alleged killer, you know, hopefully lawyers up and has some legal representation, we're getting farther away from actually knowing what happened and why this person may have done this. And I think with a lot of these shootings, we've gotten very used to this cycle of immediate outrage, immediate conspiracism. Then we find the manifesto. The manifesto is full of incomprehensible nonsense, most of which is cribbed from the deepest, dankest pits of the internet. The mainstream media, analyzes it for what it actually means. It doesn't actually mean anything. And then we sort of move on to the next thing, the next tragedy. With this particular shooting, I think it's very different in that, number one, it was a very well-entrenched and very popular conservative figure, meaning that we are immediately going to get the cries of this had to have been left-wing violence. There's no other way. This had to have been a transgender activist, Antifa super soldier. We know everything about this person before we know anything about them. But also, there's no manifesto. There's no real social media footprint from this person other than some incomprehensible jibber-jabber that may have been posted on Discord and apparently written on bullets. We don't know why this person did this. And in the absence of knowing why something happened, we make up conspiracy theories. This is how this has always worked. You know, when an outsized event that was not supposed to happen takes place, we immediately start searching for reasons why it happened. And we start to convince ourselves that we know what's going on when nobody else knows what's going on. And you throw in the toxic politicization of any kind of act of public violence, particularly against somebody like Charlie Kirk, and it is a recipe for an explosion of instant conspiracy theories and instant finger pointing before we know anything. And we still don't really know very much.
Right. The other thing is the issue that is not getting much attention is the gun once again. Last week, we did a pre-taped show about gun violence in this country about 20 minutes after Charlie Kirk was shot. So we planned this show before Charlie Kirk was shot. And I just noticed that the coverage of the horrific shooting at the Annunciation Catholic School in Minneapolis failed to focus on gun control laws, I should say much of the coverage, or provide any context about how we got to a place where 327 people are shot every day in the United States. And of those, 117 die. And again, David, going to you because you're in Ireland, I mean, this must be shocking to you and others in Europe to see that there are shootings every day in this country, and we're hardly talking about gun control.
It's completely incomprehensible to me, to my friends, my family, generally people in Ireland, just, and more broadly in Europe, do not understand how a society functions in the way that the US functions, given the amount of guns that are available and how easy it is to access these guns. And you're right, there was virtually no focus on how he obtained the gun or, you know, where he got the gun or anything like that or pushback. I know in the Oversight Committee hearing today, Kash Patel was asked about what he was going to do about this, and they mentioned the Annunciation shooting last week. But again, he just said, I'll get back to you. There was no, you know... From looking from the outside, from when I've been covering US politics for the last decade, it's just there's never, ever any change on this. It seems like people have almost given up talking about it now because they feel as if nothing will ever change, especially with the current administration in place. And I think that I cannot understand, given the proliferation of school shootings in particular, I can't understand how parents in the United States can even allow their kids to go to school knowing that a phone call may come at any point, because there's no pattern to this. It's not like it happens in particular locations or demographic types of schools. It can happen anywhere at any time. And it just makes it just really, really hard to understand how a society functions like that, because we have no concept of it over here in Europe. And I think outside of the US, generally, people don't have a concept of how it's been allowed to get to the point where it is, where those figures that you quoted are the facts of the case. And it's terrifying.
Right. And those figures come from Brady. Again, 327 people are shot in the U.S. every day. Of those, on average, 117 will die. Every day, 23 minors are shot in the United States. And of course, we have to talk about the gun lobby and follow the money. According to Open Secrets, in the past, NRA and gun money went to both Democrats and Republicans, but now almost all of NRA direct and independent support goes to Republican politicians. And the Trump administration is once again relaxing gun violence prevention policies and gun control laws. The other question that I've been looking for, AC, or at least the conversation I've been wanting to hear, is what is happening with these young men? So Tyler Robinson is just 22. How does a 22-year-old learn to shoot so from such from so far away? I mean, the New York Times has this long piece about what happened. 430 feet and one shot? He shot Charlie Kirk in the neck. I mean, how does that happen? And then the other question I've been wanting, conversation I've been wanting to hear about is, what is going on with our young men? What are they finding? I don't know anything about these. I mean, I learn a lot from you and our other guests about these groups that these guys are in, but can you tell us a bit about where are these guys hanging out? What do we need to know?
And it's great to be on a panel with such smart and really, really deeply sourced guests. And so I'll start with this. You know, I think one of the things that we see when we're looking at the online spaces that young men hang out in and the sort of communities that they form online is that, you know, you see these sort of patterns creep up over and over again. And we don't know that much about the alleged shooter in this case yet to be able to say a lot. I can say something about things I've seen in many other cases involving young men who've been engaged in acts of horrific violence and assassination and mass murder. And that, you know, they tend to are often falling into a couple of different categories. Some of them are really high achievers who are very, very successful in school, who are very bright, and are feeling a ton of stress and a ton of anxiety over their achievement. That was the case with the synagogue attacker in San Diego a few years back, who shot somebody to death in a synagogue there in a terrorist attack. It was the same thing with another person that I profiled in Central Europe, who was incredibly high achieving, but also very, very stressed out about that and very alienated. You have another cohort of young men that you often find that are completely failure to launch, who are really having trouble making a go of it in society, who are bullied at school, bullied at the job place, don't feel like they can fit in anywhere except for the sort of toxic online communities that they're finding online. And that these sort of communities, whether you're talking about the sort of Telegram groups that Dave Gilbert has highlighted in some of his work, whether you're talking about communities like the Discord community that Jack Teixeira, the military secrets leaker, came out of. You know, these are not places where people are oftentimes going to get the support that they need and the direction that they need to not engage in these sort of spectacular acts of destruction and self-destruction.
Well, Mike, we'll get you to respond after the break, because this is also disturbing, but we really need to learn more about where these people are hanging out. And then to talk about the fact that you know, they might be really angry about something. And if they didn't have a gun, they wouldn't be able to assassinate people. It's just they could use another weapon, but not a gun. And here we are, one shot. And now Charlie Kirk is dead. It's just all very disturbing, but we have to talk about this. If you would like to join us to talk about the assassination of Charlie Kirk, today we're joined by three incredible journalists who focus on extremism and hate crimes and extremist groups. And then tomorrow we're going to spend more time talking about the reaction from the right without even knowing who the shooter was, without knowing the motive. And yet they're blaming the far left, and so many people are now losing their jobs across the board. So we're going to spend more time on that tomorrow. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. If you have any questions for our guests about extremism, about where young people are hanging out online, about how the far right is responding to this, we'd love to hear from you. AC Thompson is a staff reporter with ProPublica, where he covers hate crimes and racial extremism. He covered the vigil for Charlie Kirk in Huntington Beach, and we'll ask him about that after a break. Mike Rothschild is a conspiracy theory journalist and author of two books, including The Storm Is Upon Us, How QAnon Became a Movement, Cult, and Conspiracy Theory of Everything. David Gilbert is a reporter with Wired, covering disinformation and online extremism. One of his latest pieces is called Extremist Groups Hated Charlie Kirk. They're using his death to radicalize others. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll continue our new series, The Authoritarian Playbook, with a focus on the right's response to the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Before there was a shooter, before we had a motive, they are blaming the, quote, far left. So many companies have sanctioned or fired people so far, and so we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. Today, we are joined by three journalists who cover extremism and far-right groups. They are very familiar with the spaces where young men like the alleged gunman Tyler Robinson hangs out. I mean, to think that a 22-year-old was able to shoot Charlie Kirk from a roof about 430 feet away, according to the New York Times, and it took just one shot. Authorities say he used a bolt-action rifle that is used for hunting. Tyler Robinson, the alleged shooter, was raised in a Republican home, and social media photos posted by his family over the years show him and his two younger brothers shooting and posing with guns. And we should really emphasize that authorities are still searching for a motive. AC Thompson is staff reporter with ProPublica. Mike Rothschild is a conspiracy theory journalist and author of two books. David Gilbert is a reporter with Wired. Mike, can you give us more information, give us more insight about where these young guys are hanging out? What is most disturbing to you about these spaces?
Well, I think it's important to remember that most young people are able to navigate video game chats or places like Discord or private chats and not become radicalized, and certainly not become radicalized into murdering someone. I think what happens is a lot of these guys are dealing with a future that they feel like is maybe not for them. And I think why you've seen the far right really emphasize recruiting and grooming in some instances young men is because a lot of these guys are looking at an economy that maybe is not going to be supportive to them, looking at a culture that's really changing very quickly and feels like it's kind of pushing them out. And I think a lot of these guys don't feel like they have anywhere to turn. So they turn to each other and they turn to influencers who know how to speak the very particular language of kind of online nonsense that, again, most people navigate just fine and they grow out of it and they go on and live productive lives. They don't shoot anybody. But I think for a very small group of these young men, they become so kind of stewed in this nonsense and this nihilism and this feeling of nothing's ever going to get better. Nobody understands me. Nothing out there speaks to me other than these people. and something snaps and things go wrong, and then you have a tragedy. And, you know, again, without really knowing why this alleged shooter might have done what they did, I think it's hard to say anything in specific. But I think what you have here is community. And I think the kind of community that is offered by other conspiracy theory movements, groups like QAnon, you know, movements like Pizzagate, things like that. Yes, it's about figuring out the truth and bringing the deep state down and all that stuff, but it's also about just people who understand you and who you share commonalities with and you speak the same language, whether that's, you know, a chat for an online game or whether that's QAnon. It's still feeling like people understand you, want to hear from you, value who you are and the experiences that you bring to the table. I think a lot of these guys just aren't getting that in their, quote, real lives, and they're finding it in some really dark and really toxic places.
Well, and the devastating thing is there are people who snap around the world. There are people around the world who spend time in these spaces who are angry about the future or angry about their lives. But most of them just don't have easy access to guns like they do in this country. And that's another thing, Mike, that makes this so tragic. And yet that piece of the story is just missing. And I've been doing a lot of reading over the last 2 days and watching shows. I'm just not seeing much talk about the guns.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Maybe this is more a comment on me than anybody else. But this discussion is really the first time I've thought about gun control in the guise of the Charlie Kirk shooting. And I think, honestly, for me, the moment of doing something about the easy access that young, potentially unstable people have to firearms, that ended for me after Sandy Hook.
Right.
After 20 sixth graders were shot dead and the response from the gun-owning massive conservatives was to make up conspiracy theories that the shooting didn't happen. And again, not all conservatives, certainly. I mean, it's really a kind of a fringe, but it became very popular to just sort of rationalize away with, well, it didn't happen. It was fake. How could you be so stupid as to think this was happening? Rather than actually going back to the beginning and figuring out how we can have a society where there is responsible gun ownership but not have this happen. You know, President Obama was absolutely roasted for showing emotion over these deaths and saying, hey, we can live in a better world for this, and nothing happened. Mm. And for me after that, it was just, this is done. This genie is so far out of the bottle that we need to be kind of cleaning up the mess that the genie makes rather than trying to get the genie back in the bottle.
Right. You're reminding me, there's an incredible documentary, if anyone wants to learn more about what happened after Sandy Hook politically. Frontline has a number of really important documentaries about what happened with the vote, what happened behind the scenes. Those Sandy Hook parents lobbied so hard to get basic gun control, and it didn't happen. And it's just devastating. And Frontline did an amazing job of looking at what went on behind the scenes. David, before we get to calls, would you say that that's accurate, that people in other parts, young men in other parts of the world, are hanging out in these spaces? They're not happy with their lives and they snap. But in most cases, they don't have access to these killing machines.
Yeah. It's absolutely accurate. And again, there are cases where teens are radicalized and they do, you know, conduct acts of violence. AC's obviously been covering this quite well with the Terrorgram Collective. We've seen some cases where that has ended up with people, you know, carrying out acts of violence. But in the vast majority of those cases, the acts of violence are carried out by knives or handguns. They're definitely not carried out by assault weapons or submachine guns that can kill dozens of people at once. And even acts of violence were carried out by a gun are extremely rare. There was a case in the UK recently that just went under the radar. But again, it was one of these young men. I think he was 15 or 16. And he had been radicalized online in one of these groups linked to the kind of the Comm Network 764, the kind of broader Terrorgram network. And so he was, again, just stewing in this kind of nihilistic world where, you know, everything means nothing and people conduct violence just for the sake of violence, just to entertain other people online or for their own glorification. And he had amassed a stun gun, a pocket knife, and one other piece, one other weapon that kind of, I can't remember what it was now, but something pretty inane compared to what's happening in the US. And so he was unable to actually act on his desires to carry out violence because he just simply did not have access to the guns. Now, he's being prosecuted in the UK as a result because he was talking about doing this. He just couldn't actually take that final step. And so obviously loads of people's lives have been saved as a result. And but hopefully if this young man gets the right support, he can change his life around as well. That's just not happening in the US right now with a huge cohort of men, especially young men and some young women as well. We're seeing it kind of, you know, becoming. And while it is a tiny proportion of people who are in these communities, that proportion of people seems to be growing because the kind of frequency of these attacks is growing rapidly, I think.
Hmm. Well, we have an email from a listener who says, longtime listener, love the show. So he says that I'm getting something wrong about the gun. And if I am, I apologize. I know nothing about guns. So this listener writes, one of the valuable things about your call is that it is an antidote to echo chamber rhetoric. No one's talking about preventing a 22-year-old from having a hunting rifle. It should not be surprising that he can make a technically easy shot. The bolt action 0.3-06 rifle is designed to be accurate to 500 yards. It's a World War II era rifle fitted with a modern telescopic sight with the intended use of shooting game animals. The ignorance of that set of facts would make anyone not already in your camp listen to what you have to say. Well, Robert, I don't know anything about guns, and thank you for correcting me, because I actually had to search for information about the gun because it's not in a lot of the articles. So thank you for letting us know. I'm guessing that what you're sharing here is correct. Do any of you have a comment on this? And, you know, honestly, thank you for this, Robert, because we need to be talking about this. These guns are easy to get, and this gun was used to assassinate Charlie Kirk. So we need to be talking about what kinds of guns people own and what they're capable of. Would anyone like to comment?
Yeah, my understanding of the rifle and of the alleged shooter's experience and training is that if you knew your way around a hunting rifle and it had some experience with it, this was not a particularly difficult shot to make. But it's still the sort of mental barrier of, you know, shooting a human being is to me the more interesting is not the right word, but the thing to talk about more than sort of the technical mechanics. I mean, it's, if you go back to somebody like Lee Harvey Oswald, people have talked, it's an impossible shot. It's actually not an impossible shot at all. It's, if you know what you're doing, you can do it. But it does feel like we're kind of talking about a human being shooting another human being. I don't know if the kind of nuts and bolts of sort of the distance is the most compelling thing to talk about.
Well, I think a lot of us, including myself, were shocked that this guy was able to do this with one shot. And for those of us who don't know much about guns, it is some kind of important to realize and to know that people can buy these guns that are designed to be accurate to 500 yards. You know, so even if people were patted down because Charlie Kirk was outside, even if people were patted down, it wouldn't have stopped this guy because he was on a roof. And so you know that colleges and venues, outdoor venues across the country, are now rethinking what sort of security they're going to have at events like this. And that this is just where we're at, because there are now more guns than people in this country, according to a number of gun violence organizations. So thank you for that email. Let's hear from a couple callers, and then I would love for you all to talk about how far-right extremist groups are responding to this. Let's go to Robert in San Francisco. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for allowing me to speak. One of the things that deeply concerns me, and I should premise that this is going on in my own organization, the same type of issues. I hear, who was to blame? Who was someone thinking? What were they doing? What group were they with? I don't hear any consolidated voice on, this is our best path to move forward and work our way through the crisis that we're encountering. I don't hear it. And if I'm missing it, I wish someone would tell me, or else is it the weakest voice out there? Because everyone seems to be afraid to speak out against the other side, or that there is actually a path other than what's being put out there through both extreme sides.
Well, thank you for that, Robert. AC, what are your thoughts? What are you hearing from people who are saying this needs to stop? We need to figure out how to get through this so violence doesn't continue to happen in this country.
I think the caller is correct. I think that there is like not enough of a voice out there saying, look, political violence of any sort is not the American way. This is not how we want to live. This is not a way forward for our country. It is a profound problem. And, you know, not enough, you know, the old term would be bipartisan effort to say any of this is bad. I will say I was at a journalism event last night in New York, and that was the thing that I kept hearing over and over again from speakers who were speaking to the group. And they were saying, what happened to Charlie Kirk was awful. Political violence is awful. And when someone who does a lot of speaking, like we do as journalists, is killed, we should take that seriously, that someone may want to target us for our speech. That's how these things go. One crime begets another crime begets another crime. I think your caller's right. We need a real unified strategy that says, look, we're all Americans. We're all people entitled to say things. We're all that may be annoying, offensive, and abrasive, but we should not be killing one another.
And it's just very sad that that even needs to be said. I mean, the fact that we even have to say this is just unacceptable and absolutely horrific says a lot about where our society is right now. Mike, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, we need to kind of get back to the basics here rather than the arguing over motive when we don't know what it is and we may never know what it is. Charlie Kirk, as loathsome as the things he said were, he had a right to say them. And he had a right to say them without fear of being assassinated. I have that same right. All of the people on the show have the same right. Every American has that same right. I think that very quickly you saw a number of Democrats and more left-leaning people immediately condemn the idea of shooting somebody because of their opinions. Mm. And I think we really, as much as we disagree on, you know, whether the sky is blue, I think we can agree every American, every person has the right to express their opinions and not be murdered for them. And I think until we can all just sit down and start there, I don't know how we stop this, because we can't even agree on the simplest thing.
Well, we're going to definitely talk about that more on tomorrow's show, especially Trump and his allies. Before a shooter was apprehended, before we knew anything about what happened, they blamed this on the far, quote, far left and left wing extremism, which obviously does not help. And a number of people have lost their jobs for speaking out. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow. Someone in Oakland couldn't stand the line, but wanted to mention that Utah, just to talk about some law, gun laws in Utah, and I just want to mention a piece in The Guardian that just came out. Utah campus open carry rule under fresh scrutiny after Charlie Kirk shooting. Abene Clayton writes that a recently passed state bill that allows people with concealed carry permits to carry firearms openly on college campuses has drawn fresh scrutiny. Utah has allowed for permitless, open, and concealed carry of weapons since 2021. But before the passage of HB 128, firearms had to be concealed when carried on college campuses. The law allowed people with the proper permit to carry them openly. We're definitely going to be doing more shows about guns and gun laws in the coming weeks. In our remaining minutes, I want to ask you all about how far-right groups are responding to this. David, you had a really interesting piece in Wired about extremist groups who hated Charlie Kirk, and they're now using his death to radicalize others. So you talk about the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. Can you just quickly tell us, why did they hate Charlie Kirk, and how are they now using his death to radicalize others?
Yeah, for years, Kirk had been kind of a pretty divisive figure among these more extremist groups, because he was, for a lot, in a lot of cases, the reason was simply because he was too pro-Israel. A lot of these groups are anti-Semitic by their nature, and therefore that would mark him out as someone to disagree with. They also believed he wasn't extreme enough in his view in terms of, especially around advocating for a kind of a white ethnostate that a lot of these groups would kind of be pushing for as part of their ideology. But almost immediately from when he was shot, they went into kind of this mode where they were labeling him as this moderate, which he wasn't, but that's how they labeled him. And that if, you know, if they can shoot the moderate guy, what are they going to do to us? So they kind of used it as a way to radicalize people, you know, that maybe already in their groups, radicalize them into action. People who are sitting on the fence to decide to join up, they shared links saying, look, it's time to take action. You need to stand up now. Here's the link to join your local chapter of the Proud Boys. Stuart Rhodes, who is the founder of the Oath Keepers, who was convicted for seditious conspiracy until his sentence was commuted by President Trump earlier this year. He was on InfoWars within minutes of the shooting taking place, and he was talking about restarting the Oath Keepers, talking about people across the community, or men all across the communities in the US who need to now step up, come together and protect their communities, protect their women, and effectively create these vigilante groups that should be armed. And he was calling on President Trump to, you know, to activate this kind of groundswell of people he believes are out there who are ready to kind of pick up arms and protect their community. So it was a really strange way that they, you know, they completely gloss over the fact that they never previously really supported him, but then held him up as a martyr and used him as leverage to kind of radicalize people even further.
AC, you were at the Charlie Kirk civil vigil in Huntington Beach over the weekend. And there are videos, David writes about this in his piece, videos showing men chanting, "White man, fight back," and then a caption that says, "Death to the left." What really struck you about what you heard at that vigil, and how concerned should we be about this?
Yeah, I think David's exactly right. You know, these groups were generally not super big fans of Charlie Kirk's. He was not anti-Semitic in the way that they are, but they're absolutely using his death as a way to recruit, as a place to capitalize and broaden their membership. And when you go to a place like Huntington Beach and you've got white nationalists who are openly out there wearing shirts that say National Socialism on them, and chanting "white man, fight back, unite the right," this sort of thing, they are able to operate at this point without a lot of pushback from other people, without a lot of condemnation, or they have a sense of empowerment and ability to protest, to march, and as they did, to stomp somebody down and kick them in the face and beat on them, you know? So I have some fear that this is, going to be a prime recruiting movement or a prime recruiting moment for a lot of these extremist movements. And that there are people who are scared, who are going to say, well, I want to join up and band up with these people who are tough and mean and armed and help advance their agenda.
Mike, your final thoughts? How concerned should we be about the fact that these extremist groups are using Charlie Kirk's death to radicalize people?
Oh, it's hugely concerned. You know, we've seen that some of these groups have been sort of waning in the post January 6th years. And now this feels like something to kickstart their growth. I mean, combine that with the fact that a lot of their leaders are out of prison thanks to the president's January 6th commutations. I think that this is a very radicalizing event. And in fact, I think one of the reasons why they are pushing this far left trans activist Antifa angle so hard is because that's the kind of thing that pushes young men over into, you know, taking up arms. Whereas if this shooter's background is a bunch of nonsense that doesn't make any sense and he didn't really have a motive, you can't really recruit off of that. But you can definitely recruit of you can recruit off, the far left is coming after us and they just silenced one of our leaders who could, you know, you could be next. That's pretty easy to recruit off of. So yeah, this is hugely concerning.
What are you watching for, AC? Because you spend a lot of time in these spaces. What's changing right now and what are you watching for? And we have about a minute left.
Yeah, my concern is to see if we see an uptick in public events, if we see an uptick in membership in these extremist social groups, social media groups and channels. That's the thing that I'm concerned about. If these recruiting efforts really work and they really are emboldened to be out in public again and be out on the streets.
Well, and it's easy to forget this because so much is going on, but the BBC reports that the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers are among over 1,500 Capitol Right defendants who were pardoned by Trump. NPR reports that dozens of these defendants who received pardons from Trump had past criminal convictions for charges including rape and manslaughter. And it's just incredible that we hardly ever talk about that. Well, thank you all for joining us. I think this is such an important discussion that we need to, unfortunately, continue. AC Thompson is a staff reporter with ProPublica, where he covers hate crimes and racial extremism. He was at the vigil for Charlie Kirk in Huntington Beach over the weekend. Mike Rothschild is a conspiracy theory journalist, author of The Storm Is Upon Us, How QAnon Became a Movement, Cult, and Conspiracy Theory of Everything. David Gilbert is a reporter at Wired. You can find his latest pieces, including extremist groups hated Charlie Kirk. They're using his death to radicalize others. David, Mike, and AC, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show, and I hope you can join us tomorrow. We'll continue our new series, The Authoritarian Playbook, by talking about the Trump administration's response to the assassination of Charlie Kirk. J.D. Vance actually hosted Charlie Kirk's podcast on Monday, saying that people should tell their employers if they see someone celebrating Kirk's killing, and a lot of people are being fired. We hope you can join us tomorrow. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.